compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, this is a smoke-free environment, more light than heat, I'd like to think anyway. My phone number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Let's go to the phones. Let's talk to Michelle in Tempe, Arizona. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I have a senior in high school, my daughter, and she has a friend who lost her dad last night.
Okay.
And she is a Mormon girl. And so my daughter was wondering, am I allowed to go to the funeral? So I thought that was an interesting question.
Yeah. I personally, I would, if it were a friend of the family and I knew, you know, if I knew them, I wouldn't not go. I would go to pay my respects.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
It's different from a strictly religious service. So, like, I would not encourage any Catholics to go to, like, a Mormon Sunday service or something like that. Even though I myself have attended them, I've done so as part of my desire to be fully informed and to be as knowledgeable as possible. So I had, you might say, kind of a research reason for doing that. But a funeral would not really fall into that category in my estimation. So, yeah, I would say go and pay your respects and pray for that person and, show solidarity with the family as they're grieving right now.
Great. Thank you so much. Very good. Have a good day.
You're most welcome. Thank you. Let's see. We'll go to Steve now in Westchester, Illinois. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Patrick. Thanks for taking my call. It's your listener. Your Theology and Sanity listener here in Westchester.
Oh, great. Welcome.
So I wanted to make a comment on a discussion that often comes up this time of year and was mentioned yesterday in the show. So 2 points, but the topic itself is about the virginity of Mary and Jesus's virginal birth. And a caller yesterday made a comment that I thought, you know, she made a great comment. But I wanted to bring a second side to that, and that was the idea that when Jesus was resurrected, he passed through walls. And you kind of made the connection that, you know, as though his virginal birth might be that of light passing through glass. And the question and the comment in that I had was, when Jesus was resurrected, he was in his glorified body, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously.
Yes.
So in his birth, he was yet glorified. So my thought was that he would take on the natural aspects of his humanity, which would be a natural, normal birth. What are your thoughts in that regard?
Yes. Well, I believe yesterday we talked about this. I don't know if you heard that part of it, but I pointed out that even during his earthly life before the resurrection, he was known to do certain things bodily that would be impossible normally, such as walk on water. So I likened that to walking through a wall in Acts chapter 1 or Acts chapter 2, where in his glorified body, of course, he could do things that were impossible otherwise, but he also could do those things in his non-glorified body. So that being the case, it seems to me, to go back to the question of Mary's perpetual virginity, and I'll share a little bit about her perpetual virginity from a kind of a dogmatic standpoint. But I don't think that the argument that he was glorified in a way akin to his glorified body after the resurrection, I don't think that argument would really work because of the example that I just mentioned. Because it's not necessitated. If in his non-glorified body the Lord could walk on water, then in his non-glorified body, he could, in a miraculous way, be born without any effect on the bodily integrity of Mary. So I tend to approach it that way. We don't really know anything more. And, you know, the church does not say that we can't believe that it was a normal birth, the way women give birth to children. The church doesn't say that that's out of the question. The church leaves the question open. But there's that remaining mystery that because the church's defined dogma of her perpetual virginity includes that she was a virgin before, during, and after, that's an important part to remember, that the church doesn't just say she was a perpetual virgin and kind of leave it open-ended, it specifically says that during her delivery, she remained a virgin. So how does that work? How does that happen? We don't know. So rather than, you know, kind of sort through the possibilities, it seems like that in God's wisdom is something he didn't intend for us to know. So,
well, can I interject?
Yeah, sure.
So, I appreciate and I agree with you, and thank you for expounding on the first part, because these very deep conversations and the way that they're expounded, I think, can really enrich our faith and make us appreciate the truths that are almost hiding in plain sight. But the second part, and that was the other part of my comment and that I was going to bring up, the word during, which I think needs to better explain and to better understand that concept, would need the definition of virginity for a feminine virginity. And I failed to make the connection of virginal, like this. I firmly believe, of course, that Mary was a virgin, you know, throughout her entire life. But at what point and why is it that the way that Jesus may have been born affect that? If by normal status we would say, you know, a person is a virgin if they do not partake in the marital act.
Right.
If Mary never partook in the marital act, at what point did she stop being a virgin if she perhaps gave, you know, birth as is normal in the status of humanity?
Well, there's a reason, and because this is such a delicate topic, I hesitate to really talk too much about it, just also out of honor for Our Lady. I mean, this is her that we're talking about. So I will just speak sort of in general terms, but I want to share with you what the church says on this issue. So the word during is not really the word that's used in the Latin documents. So Pope Paul IV, he declared, this is in 1555, that the Blessed Virgin Mary persisted always, I'm just translating from the Latin here, persisted always in the integrity of her virginity. And the formula that's used here is ante partum, in partu, et perpetuo post partum. And that literally means before delivery, or, you know, we talk about postpartum, so when the baby is born from the mother. So before the delivery, in the delivery, that's in partu, et perpetuo postpartum, and forever or perpetually after the birth of the baby. So this gets to the question of how we defined virginity. So you are absolutely correct that virginity, in its general sense, most people understand it to mean that it is somebody who has never engaged in sexual intercourse. Now, it can also be understood in an anatomical sense that doesn't necessarily affect the first sense one way or the other, but that has to do with bodily integrity. And here I just want to speak in general terms. I don't want to get more specific than I need to. But there are ways in which one can determine whether or not a woman is a virgin. And this is a secondary sense of the word virginity. So the church, recognizing this in its description of Mary's perpetual virginity, simply says that she remained a virgin her entire life. And the in partu part of this formula is saying to us that, in other words, it's referring to the delivery itself. So obviously it's not referring to virginity in the first sense that we talked about. It's referring to her virginity in the second sense, the physiological sense, and it leaves it at that. So I'll quote here from a book called Fundamentals of Catholic Dogma, and here's the section on Mary's perpetual virginity, and under the heading, Mary bore her son without any violation of her virginal integrity, and this is a de fide doctrine. The dogma merely asserts the fact of the continuance of Mary's physical virginity without determining more closely how it is to be physiologically explained. In general, the fathers and the schoolmen conceived it as a non-injury and accordingly taught that Mary gave birth in a miraculous fashion without the opening of the womb and consequently also without pains. Now, he references here St. Thomas Aquinas in the Summa Theologiae in the third section, question 28. He says, however, according to modern natural scientific knowledge, the purely physical side of virginity consists in the non-fulfillment of, as you said, the marriage act, and the non-contact of the female egg by the male seed. Thus, referring to the bodily integrity, it does not destroy virginity, while on the other hand, it belongs to complete natural motherhood. It follows from this that from the concept of virginity alone, the miraculous character of the process of birth cannot be inferred. If it cannot be, and must not be derived from the other facts of Revelation, and here's where it refers to when I was talking about in Revelation chapter 12, where it talks about a woman wailing aloud in pain as she labors to give birth. Now, it doesn't directly cite that, but it alludes to it. So there's more to it, and it also gives a few quotations from the church fathers and the things that they had to say, the popes and the councils. So rather than belabor the point on air, I think it might be more discreet if you were to get that book. It's called Fundamentals of Catholic Dogma. And then you can read at great length some of those things that were said about that. Does that sound fair, Steve?
Yes, yes. Thank you, Patrick. I know, and that's why I wanted to be delicate, and I know that there are delicate ears that tend to listen to your show, so I didn't want to go too far in the deep end, but I always appreciate getting your take on these kind of things, and thank you for your insight.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your confidence, and I'm so glad to know you like the show. Thank you for that. Let's go now to Tim in Minnesota. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Patrick. Question for you today is trying to evangelize, doing the Catechetical Institute, and I had a question from a gal at work yesterday in reference to why God allows certain individuals to live and certain individuals to die. Uh-huh. Her question to me was a young child is very sick, and people pray, and the child lives, and they all praise God, which is great. Yeah. But then on the other hand, another person may pass away, and why, I guess, is the one person allowed to live and the one person allowed to die? Mm-hmm. I tried to explain it, I guess, as from original sin standpoint and the relativity of evil, that we're all subject to decay and death. And I just couldn't put it quite into words, and I wanted your take mm-hmm. on how better to explain it.
Yeah. I remember when I was a child, Tim, you probably had the same experience. I think most people probably did. When I would see my parents doing things or making decisions to go here or do that, and I didn't understand why, it didn't make sense to me, and yet they had their reasons for doing it. And as I grew up later, I discovered, oh, okay, now I see why they made this decision. It didn't make sense to me when I was a kid, but they had reasons that I was unaware of. And then when I grew older and I became aware of those reasons, then things clicked and I realized, okay, that was a good decision. I just didn't understand why they did it. So from an experiential point of view, I take that approach to this deep question that you're asking, and that is, why does God seem to answer prayer in the affirmative when you're praying for somebody to live, and he doesn't answer the prayer in the affirmative when you're praying for someone else to live and that person dies? And this is one scenario. There are many other scenarios. So why is that? Why does God not say yes to every time we say a prayer for somebody to live? And this is, I liken it to the fact that God has his plan that I don't understand. And sometimes I get the thought, like, well, maybe God knew that for this person to die under these circumstances would be more merciful than something that would happen to that person down the road that God spares him from. You know, maybe spares him from some terrible sin that he might fall into and then die unrepentant. So by taking him early, it's a grace or a blessing that doesn't seem like it to us, because we don't know his plan and we don't know those future possibilities. But God, of course, knows them. So it looks mysterious to us. Why would God allow this person to die young, for example? And that could be one explanation for it. Another explanation could be that there are benefits to others, maybe even including that person himself, that are unknown to us. And that by having that person come home to heaven sooner, would be a blessing. I'm thinking, for example, about St. Maria Goretti, who was 11 years old, and the neighbor kid, well, he was 19, 20 years old, he tried to rape her, and she refused, and he stabbed her, 11, 12 times, 13 times, whatever it was, and she wound up dying of her wounds within a day or so. And what a horrible, terrible thing for an 11-year-old child to have to go through. But on the other hand, not that I would ever wish that on anybody, but in retrospect, we can look back and say that her intercession led to the conversion of her killer. So he, by all assumptions, is saved in the end and winds up going to heaven. She offers her sufferings for his sake, and he winds up repenting. And I don't know how many other countless miracles there might be of conversion due to her intercession. Now, does that adequately explain why God permitted her to be stabbed to death? Probably not. But again, I mean, when I'm faced with the mystery of God's plan that I don't understand, I fall back on that childhood experience of saying, well, my parents love me and they did things that at the time didn't make sense to me. But as I grew older, they began to make sense. And I believe that ultimately that's the answer when we ponder this question that you're asking. It just seems so mysterious to us right now. But eventually it will make a lot more sense, I think. What do you think?
Which is, I guess, me, yes. And that's kind of how I answered it, that God may allow someone to die for the greater good, even though we don't understand. There could be several conversions, and it really falls back on the theological virtues of faith and hope, and
yeah,
also charity, I guess, for love.
Mm-hmm.
I've learned a ton in the last 7 years that I've turned back to the Catholic faith that I was born and raised in. I think I have more of an impact on people than I realize, but...
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? And only in heaven will we look back and understand the totality of what all this means. Great question, Tim. Great comments. I appreciate it. I'll be back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show right after this quick timeout. My number is 888-914-9149. Give me a call. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Sleigh bells ring, are you listening? In the lane, snow's glistening.
All righty then. All righty then.
You getting into the spirit of Christmas?
I am. I'm still adventing. I'm an Adventist during this time of the year. But yeah, I'm excited about Christmas. I'm looking forward to it. The birth of our Lord, sure. I don't know about you guys, Cyrus, but Nancy and I, for many years now, basically, part of it was economic when we first started to have a whole passel of kids, was we would spend our gift-giving money on the kids. And mm-hmm. Nancy and I sort of got to the point years ago where we thought, well, we're not going to give each other gifts.
Mm-hmm.
Our gift will be watching the kids, watching,
yeah,
you know.
That's nice.
So that's kind of how we've done it. So for me, and I feel as though looking back on it, that it was really a good move. For me, Christmas, for me personally, has nothing to do with gifts. It has nothing to do with getting a gift or even giving a gift, although we give our children and our grandchildren gifts. But I don't expect any gifts. And I feel a kind of freedom, a kind of liberation that... I'm never worried. I'm never disappointed. I always just enjoy Christmas for what it is.
Just happy to be there.
Happy to be there. Yeah. And there's really, I mean, I don't need anything. I mean, I might like a new book or something like that, but there's nothing in my life that I don't have that I really, really have to have. So in a way, it's gift giving for me would be kind of superfluous. So I like to think I'm simple in my tastes. I don't know how other people feel about that, but that's how I feel. So what about you guys? Are you still doing the gift giving thing?
Yeah, we give each other smaller gifts, but it's really about the kids and
yeah,
and you know, trying to remind them what Christmas is all about. But at the same time, we're the type of family that as soon as Thanksgiving's over, I'm grabbing the Christmas
stuff.
The
tree is
up,
huh?
I'm getting the tree up. The lights are up. Yeah, and I know that's not everybody, but man, December is all. The whole Christmas for us is part of Advent, and we go,
yeah,
it doesn't stop.
Do you ever give money to the Salvation Army bell ringers when you come out of the grocery store?
I have, but I don't always. Uh-oh. Now I feel
I have too.
Now I feel
no,
guilty.
This is not a trick question.
Okay.
No. I'm not trying to trap you.
All right.
As you may have guessed, I'm not a member of the Salvation Army. But I've given money to them before, but they're embroiled in a new controversy. Now, their bell ringers have been out for weeks now. I guess they allow them to start bell ringing maybe like right after Thanksgiving. And I ran across this just recently about they published a little booklet called Let's Talk About Racism. And there's a real backlash against that because, as it's being described, this is an article by Jim Hoft. The situation is dire. Salvation Army faces holiday shortage after telling white donors to face their racism. Now, I'm going to read to you a statement from the Salvation Army. In fact, we might even have some audio. Tell me if we do. I think we may have one audio clip.
We do.
Okay, cool. So let me set it up. This is the article by Jim Hoft, Gateway Pundit. The Salvation Army asked for more than donations this year. The Christian charitable organization asked all white donors to reflect on their racism this year. After a major uproar, the Salvation Army backtracked over Thanksgiving weekend and released a statement refuting the claims of their racial demands. And we'll hear from the Salvation Army in a moment. The Salvation Army then removed its absurd Let's Talk About Racism guide following the intense backlash over a text last week that told white donors to, quote, sincerely apologize for their racism while hinting that Christianity is institutionally racist. Now, the link to this page is broken now. So if you go to the Salvation Army page and click on this link to get that booklet that they had put out, it was an e-booklet, Let's Talk About Racism, you can't get it anymore because they took it down. The Salvation Army is now facing a toy and donation shortage this year. And the Salvation Army is urging communities to find ways to help. The nonprofit reports that it gets 75% of its total annual donations during November and December, and they are once again in need of support. Now, this is not a commercial for the Salvation Army. This is the article that's describing the backlash against what many people interpreted as an insult that was based on your race. Colonel Cindy Foley of the Northwest Salvation Army Division said, there are many reasons why both financial and toy donations are down this year, not the least of which is likely pandemic fatigue and concerns about employment in the future. We are actually trying to provide food, shelter, toys, and clothing to double the number of families we served last Christmas. And in the midst of the growing need, we are seeing fewer people donating at our virtual and physical kettles. Well, that may be partly to explain it, but we nonetheless have this article, well, the booklet that they published that they then had to retract. So this is, I think, a big part of the problem. I don't see how it couldn't be part of the problem. Now, we'll hear that Salvation Army message in a moment. This is from Central Nova News. The Salvation Army wants its white donors to give more than just money this Christmas season. Now, this is the article that was printed shortly after that book, Let's Talk About Racism, the ebook, was published. So this is a reaction to it. They want their white donors to give more than just money this Christmas. Its leadership is also demanding that they apologize for being racist. It's part of a push by the Christian charitable organization to embrace the ideas of Black Lives Matter, an activist group working to, among other things, quote, dismantle white privilege and disrupt the Western prescribed nuclear family structure. And that, by the way, is just part of what was originally on the Black Lives Matter website in the About Us section in the aftermath of the George Floyd killing. This was something that people began to take a look at because of all the Black Lives Matter protests that had erupted in the aftermath of his killing. And people were shocked to find that they were openly, avowedly Marxist and queer and dismantling white privilege, which is a separate category of a problem. They also said they wanted to disrupt the nuclear family structure. Now, a lot of people who might have otherwise had sympathy for Black Lives Matter, at least in theory, even if they didn't have sympathy for the violence that was perpetrated in some cases under the name of Black Lives Matter, and even at the behest of Black Lives Matter as an organization, when they read that part of the Black Lives Matter About Us section on the website, many people were like, wait a minute, what on earth is this group really all about? And so, in short order, that was taken down. And now there's a very heavily sanitized, much more generic kind of explanation of who they are. And all of these kinds of things about dismantling the family, or dismantling white privilege, and disrupting the nuclear family structure, and being queer, and all these other things. That's gone now. So the Salvation Army, again, back to Central Nova News, the Salvation Army's Alexandria-based leadership has created an International Social Justice Commission, which has developed and released a resource to educate its white donors, volunteers, and employees called Let's Talk About Racism. It asserts Christianity is institutionally racist, calling for white Christians to repent and offer a sincere apology to black people for being antagonistic to black people or the culture, values, and interests of the black community. Now, see, the problem here is that they're pointing this finger at an entire racial group, which is, by the way, the essence of racism. Masquerading as anti-racism, it's actually a form of racism, where you're attributing to a whole group of people solely on the basis of their ethnicity, solely on the basis of their skin color, and you are stigmatizing them for something that any number of them, now any number of them may be guilty of such things and are, but quite a few are not. And so it's patently unfair. It's patently racist, again, under the guise of being anti-racist. So the article continues with this quote from this booklet, Let's Talk About Racism, that has since been retracted by the Salvation Army. Part of it says, many have come to believe that we live in a post-racial society, but racism is very real for our brothers and sisters who are refused jobs and housing, denied basic rights, and brutalized and oppressed simply because of the color of their skin. There is an urgent need for Christians to evaluate racist attitudes and practices in light of our faith and live faithfully in today's world. Now, I've got no objection to any of that. Simply put, I mean, all of those things are laudable goals. We should always and everywhere denounce racism. We should always and everywhere denounce white supremacy. But the implication in this booklet, although I never had a chance to read the booklet, I can only read the excerpts from it that were salvaged by people like the person who wrote this article before it was taken down. It demonstrates the mindset that if you're white, you're racist. And it ties into this whole ideology that you can't help being racist. You just are. White privilege. You can't escape it. There's nothing you can do about it. You're a racist. In an accompanying study guide on racism, Salvation Army authors explain that all whites are racist, even if they don't realize it. And here's a quote from the study guide. The subtle nature of racism is such that people who are not consciously racist easily function with the privileges, empowerments, and benefits of the dominant ethnicity, thus unintentionally perpetuating injustice. Sunday school curriculum that only uses white photography and imagery is an example of what they believe is perpetuating injustice. The lesson says we must stop denying the existence of individual and systemic institutional racism. They exist, and we are still at work to keep white Americans in power, the lesson says. It also says these systems give privileges to white people. Let's Talk About Racism pushes arguments identical to those of leading critical race theory purveyors, such as Robin DiAngelo and Henry Rogers, who goes by the name Ibram Kendi, whose work is recommended by Salvation Army authors. These two authors claim that any observable difference in relative behavior or accomplishment between racial groups is due to the inherent racism of whites, arguing against traditional American concepts of equal opportunity, for example, in favor of the Marxist-inspired goal of the equality of outcome. Part of the Salvation Army lesson read, quote, structural racism is the overreaching system of racial bias across institutions and society. These systems give privileges to white people, resulting in disadvantages to blacks. Proponents of critical race theory don't believe whites, Asians, or Hispanics can avoid being prejudiced against blacks. They want them to demonstrate what they call, quote unquote, anti-racism in favor of blacks, helping to establish lower standards for them than they do members of other racial groups, or making cash reparation payments as compensation for previous racism, real and alleged. Another section from the Salvation Army lesson says, stop trying to be colorblind. While this might sound helpful, it actually ignores the God-given differences we all possess, as well as the beautiful cultures of our black and brown brothers and sisters. Instead of trying to be colorblind, the Salvation Army said, try seeing the beauty in our differences and welcome them into your homes and churches and workplaces. Being colorblind also ignores the discrimination our black and brown brothers and sisters face and does not allow us to address racism properly. I don't think I need to comment on every example of this perspective, but it's got the Salvation Army in some hot water. So they have a response to this, And I want to read both the statement that's on their website, and then we'll also play the audio. Why don't we play the audio? Now, this is from, I believe he's the top figure, the top authority in the Salvation Army. Let's listen.
I'm Commissioner Ken Hodder, National Commander of the Salvation Army. There is too much at stake right now for the people we serve for there to be any confusion about what the Salvation Army stands for. So let me be clear. We believe only in the Bible. We endorse no social theory or philosophy, and we never will. And we're not asking anyone to apologize for the color of their skin. We believe that all of us are made in God's image, and that He loves all of us equally, and that racism is totally incompatible with Christianity. We apologize for any confusion the Salvation Army has caused on this, but right now, there are lots of people who need our help. They need your help. So join us in meeting human needs in Christ's name without discrimination. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas indeed. Well, my reaction to that is the following. He says, we believe only the Bible. Worse to the effect, we don't believe in, we do not endorse any other ideology. That's not true. Because the Salvation Army booklet, the e-booklet that it published and has since retracted, that you can't get a hold of it now, it specifically says the opposite of what this gentleman just said. And it was under the auspices of the Salvation Army. It was a Salvation Army communique on this issue of racism. It was on the Salvation Army website. Now, presumably, I mean, I have no reason to think otherwise, presumably the Salvation Army authorities are vigilant about what is allowed to be on their website, because if it's on their website under their imprint, their name, most people are going to assume that that's something that they sanctioned, something that they approved. So with all due respect, I don't think that he's being entirely candid. It seems disingenuous on the one hand to say we believe only in the Bible, we do not accept or promote, or whatever the wording was that he used. You heard it. Any other ideology or any other view, it's just, that seems disingenuous to me. Now, I want you to draw your own conclusions. I'm just here to give you the facts, and you can evaluate them and make your own decision whether or not you want to put money in the kettle. I'm all in favor. First of all, let me say it again. I am absolutely 100% opposed to racism in any form. I denounce it. I denounce white supremacy. I denounce any way in which people, as a result of the color of their skin, would be marginalized or harmed or kept back or any of those things. I don't know how many ways I can say it, but I absolutely 100% committed to denouncing it and seeing it eliminated. But this is not the way to do that. The way to properly, in my view at least, address the deep and entrenched historic problem of racism, and to the extent that white supremacy has existed, and we know it has existed in certain quarters and in certain ways, there's no way to deny that, that's true. But it's not all pervasive. And I reject the notion that all white people are necessarily racist just because they're white. That is a racist thing to say. And the fact that that is embedded in the very framework of these critical race theory books and other things, that is the problem right there. And I think the Salvation Army, it has egg on its face now, because it realizes, uh-oh, we thought we were doing something, you know, really socially responsible, and it backfired in their faces, because I don't know how many white people historically tend to put money in the Salvation Army kettles on the way out of the grocery store. I would have to think the number is huge in terms of the population of this country. And maybe some of them now are thinking, do I really want to donate money to an organization that looks at me as if I'm a racist? Final point when we come back, and I want to read to you, again, in all fairness, I want to make sure that everybody is clear that I'm not trying to, you know, skewer the Salvation Army. I want their own message heard for its own merits. And I'll share with you a statement that they made on this issue when we come back from this quick timeout. You're listening to The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Hey, there's a line open, so now is your opportunity to ask Patrick a question by calling 888-914-9149.
I have a dream. my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
The unforgettable, indelible words of Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, which are all the more pertinent now because, as the Salvation Army is finding out in a big way, to tell people not to be colorblind, to tell people to go against what Martin Luther King rightly said in that speech about people being judged by the content of their character, not by the color of their skin. His message goes completely against modern critical race theory, which is built upon the premise that the color of your skin exactly defines who you are and what your limitations are, or your unlimitations when it comes to power if you happen to be white. Martin Luther King and his position on this issue of colorblindness would be scorned nowadays. They won't say it. They won't come out and say that, but they don't agree with his point. They want people to be judged by the color of their skin. Now, when I say they, I'm not referring to the Salvation Army. But the tie-in with the Salvation Army, if you're just tuning in now, because we've been talking about it for the last 10 minutes or so, is that they recently released a pamphlet online, an e-booklet, if you want to call it that, called Let's Talk About Racism. And I shared with you some selections from the booklet, which you can no longer get because they've taken the link down. And they're backtracking, and they're issuing statements, you know, we only go by the Bible alone. You heard the commissioner say a few minutes ago, we don't adhere to or promote or any other ideology or anything. And that is exactly the problem, because this Let's Talk About Racism offering that they put on the internet was all about that, all about that. And it's cited in the footnotes. Ibram Kendi and D'Angelo. I keep getting her confused with the National Lampoon Vacation movie. That actress was Beverly D'Angelo. And every time I come to this author's name, I wind up saying her name instead of the author's name. But they reference these people. White Fragility is the book in question. And now they're saying, well, we don't really hold those views. So here, to kind of put a little bow on top, here's a statement that's on the Salvation Army website. And again, in all fairness, in an effort to try to be as complete and comprehensive, I'll conclude with what the Salvation Army said. You've heard my critique and my questions. Well, I'll give them the last word. They say the holidays are a welcome reminder of the things we are grateful for and for the power of service on behalf of those who are less fortunate. The Salvation Army mission statement clearly outlines the nature of our service: to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ and meet human needs in his name without discrimination. The beliefs that motivate our service are based solely on the Bible, and that will never change. Now, the heading of this statement from the Salvation Army is the Salvation Army's response to false claims on the topic of racism. I don't think the claims are false. How can they be false if they're simply quoting what the Salvation Army said? How is that false? But although we remain committed to serving everyone in need, regardless of their beliefs, backgrounds, or lifestyle, some individuals and groups have recently attempted to mislabel our organization to serve their own agendas. It doesn't look like that to me. They have claimed that we believe our donors should apologize for their skin color, that the Salvation Army believes America is an inherently racist society, and that we have abandoned our Christian faith for one ideology over another. These claims are simply false, and they distort the very goal of our work. Well, I'm responding here. I would say, okay, fair enough. If that's the case, then demonstrate that by showing how the document that you put on your website, SalvationArmyUSA.org, the document in question was called Let's Talk About Racism, and it said those things. I mean, if you want to refute this, then demonstrate how that is not true. I don't know how you'll do that. But I think it's disingenuous to suggest that individuals and groups have attempted to mislabel the organization to serve their own agendas. I think they were simply, my impression is, they're just reacting to it. They're reacting to what you put on the website. I guess people have a right to do that, don't they? So the Salvation Army says those claims are simply false and they distort the very goal of our work. The truth is that the Salvation Army believes that racism is fundamentally incompatible with Christianity, and that we are called by God to work toward a world where all people are loved, accepted, and valued. That's good. Our positional statement on racism makes this clear. These beliefs and goals are critically important because we know that racism exists, and we are determined to do everything the Bible asks of us to overcome it. The Salvation Army occasionally publishes internal study guides on various complex topics. Here's where they're going to kind of, sounds like they're kind of going to skirt around this. I've read this a few times, and each time I've read it, I've gotten this kind of, it's getting kind of squishy at this point. We occasionally publish internal study guides on various complex topics to help foster positive conversations and grace-filled reflection among Salvationists. By openly discussing these issues, we always hope to encourage the development of a more thoughtful organization that is better positioned to support those in need. But no one is being told how to think, period. The booklet was called Let's Talk About Racism. Isn't that the Salvation Army giving its opinion on how people should think on the issue of racism? And if it's not that, then what is it? If it's not a suggestion like, here's what we think you should think about racism, then what is it? They answer, in this case, the guide Let's Talk About Racism was issued as a voluntary resource, but it has since become a focus of controversy. We have done our best to provide accurate information, but unfortunately, some have chosen to ignore those efforts. Well, not us, that's for sure. We're giving the Salvation Army ample time to make its own case, and that's only fair. At the same time, international headquarters realized that certain aspects of the guide may need to be clarified. Consequently, for both reasons, the International Social Justice Commission has now withdrawn the guide for appropriate review. And I have a feeling you'll never see it again. I think it's withdrawn. If I had to guess, it's withdrawn permanently. And they conclude with this. We at the Salvation Army remain undeterred in our mission because we are confident in the power of the gospel and because millions of vulnerable Americans need our help. And we remain deeply grateful for the support of a generous public, people from all walks of life, from all parts of the country, who help us meet human need wherever it exists. Our supporters know that ours is a message of love, even for those who disagree or attack us. What about what many people perceive to be your attack upon them? What I find interesting is that, and then there's the obligatory, may God bless you and Merry Christmas at the very end. Okay, so that's the conclusion of this statement. But they're casting it, what I find interesting is they're casting it as if they are the innocent victim of a scurrilous campaign to discredit them by saying things about them that aren't really true. But all I'm seeing, unless I'm missing something here, all I'm seeing is people saying, wait a minute, in your document, this is what you said. And this is what you told people they should think. And this is the way in which you approached your white benefactors, telling them that they're inherently racist. And I read you the pertinent sections from it as reported, so you can judge for yourself whether or not that's in fact what they were saying, but it sure seemed to me that that's what they were saying. Why identify white people as a specific group and talk about white supremacy and other things like that if you didn't really mean what you said? Now, I have a feeling they did mean what they said then, but, you know, the backlash pointed out to them that it was not well received in certain quarters and not by people who are, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, from what I could guess, I'll bet you the KKK not only hasn't even heard about this, they couldn't care less. They probably couldn't care less about the Salvation Army one way or the other. And the Proud Boys and the Skinheads and all the other, you know, riffraff organizations that are white supremacists, I'll bet they couldn't care less about this to the extent they even know about it. But what about all those good, decent people who are coming out of the grocery store and they feel moved out of generosity and a desire to help people who are disadvantaged? They feel moved to put some cash in the kettle as the bell ringer is standing there in the cold. I've done that. I think it's a good thing. So for Salvation Army to portray itself as if it's this innocent victim when it's simply a reaction to what they posted doesn't seem quite right to me. And because it's a story, I thought you would want to know about it. And because, you know, sooner or later, you're going to go to the grocery store or some other place of business, and there may well be a bell ringer out in front, and to, you know, be aware of this. That's all. Be aware of it.
But that bell ringer might not know anything about this. Don't be mean to the bell ringer.
Oh, definitely not. And I'm not saying, and I'm not even saying, don't donate to the Salvation Army. They do good work. They have historically mm-hmm. done a great deal of good for a great many people. So my point is not to say shut these people down, but to point, to draw attention to the fact that they're ringing the alarm bell saying that we are way, way, way down on donations. And this could be part of the reason. This might be part of the reason why people are saying, yeah, I'll pass.
You know what another reason might be?
What's that?
Amazon. I'm not going into the big stores where I see That's less true. Of these because I'm doing a lot of online shopping, and I'm sure I'm not the only one. I see those Amazon trucks everywhere. They're like lice.
Yeah. Like lice. Well, they're bringing you goodies, man. How could they be like lice?
All right, good lice.
Good lice.
Yeah, that's the good
well,
kind.
I understand what you're saying, and that actually is a very good point. And I don't mean to suggest, because I have no way of knowing whether or not this the racist controversy that the Salvation Army is now embroiled in, I don't know to what extent that is putting a dent in how much money they're getting. I'm guessing that it probably put some kind of a dent in it. I don't know, but you're making a good point, because there are no bell ringers outside the Amazon distribution centers, because all that's coming and going are the big rigs. And when the Amazon delivery truck rolls up into your driveway to disgorge the boxes of stuff that you ordered, there's no bell ringer there to collect any money from you. Right. So that could easily be it. But everybody has to go to the grocery store.
True.
Right?
True.
I think that's where I see the most. And I wonder if maybe that's because people have come out of the grocery store. I'm sure there's a science behind this. You come out of the grocery store, unless you paid with your debit card, you got some jingle in your pocket. You got some change, and who wants to carry change in their pocket? So in a way, it's almost doing you a favor to make a donation by putting money in the kettle, and you don't have to carry that jingle in your pocket. I don't like carrying change in my pocket at all. So, well, we'll see. We'll see what happens. And I have no ill will toward the Salvation Army. Please understand that. I'm not, you know, never have been, you know, a critic or anything. It's just when something like this pops up and it's got people concerned about it, I think it's worth discussing, only because a lot of people listening right now are the generous, good-hearted people who put money into the Salvation Army kettles. So there you have it. Cyrus, any final thoughts? We have to go to another break. Any final thoughts?
Now the grass is kind of angry at us, though.
Cool beans. Onward ho.
Onward
Let's ho. Talk to the trees.
Oh.
Onward ho.
Cool beans.
It's westward ho. Not onward ho.
The gift that keeps on giving.
Those ladies, I would pay if they could produce an album of those kind of things. I would pay for it. I really would. Do we even know who they are?
I have no idea. I have no idea.
Cool beans.
Cool beans. Onward ho.
And the grass is mad at us.
Let's.
I thought it was the trees that were mad at them for a while.
Some of the trees were mad, but I think they apologized to the trees.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't want that on my karmic record.
No, I really don't.
I really don't. I really don't. Okay, well, we have hour three coming up right after this. If you've just stumbled upon this program and you're saying, what on earth is happening here? Well, this is the Patrick Madrid Show, and you're invited to participate by calling 888-914-9149. I will be right back, so please don't go anywhere.
Yes, that's true.